This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So our talk today is, as Andrew already mentioned, when your world spins out of control. So what we're going to talk about today is how your inner ear and brain work together for movement, balance, and perception. So the things we're going to go through today, we're going to discuss what balance is and all the different components of balance. We're then going to talk a little bit about the vestibular system, anatomy, physiology, how the vestibular system works, and what happens when something goes wrong with the vestibular system. We're also going to discuss when it's a medical emergency and when you should go to the ED emergently versus when you can wait and see your primary care physician later and kind of some of those signs and symptoms to look for. And we'll also, at the end, talk a little bit about how to keep your balance as well as how to improve your balance. So the Webster basic definition of balance is an even distribution of weight, which enables someone or something to remain upright and steady. So what we'll be talking about today is how it is that we do this as a human being, right? How do we work on distributing our weight so that we can keep ourselves upright in our daily lives? So in general, people's perception of balance is a simple balance activity, like standing on one foot, as you can see in this figure here. However, balance is much more complex than that. Balance is generally altogether working on your postural stability. And when we're talking about balance, there's two different things we talk about. We talk about static balance and dynamic balance. So static balance is when you're standing or sitting and balancing in a different position, but you're statically standing there. You're not moving. There's no dynamic forces on you. When you're doing dynamic balance, that's when you're doing maybe another task at the same time. So you're sitting and you're texting. You're standing and you're walking. You're trying to think about something as you're walking across the street. You're trying to make it across the street before the light turns red. So those would be dynamic balance tasks as you're having to do two different things at once. So maybe a little bit of like dual tasking while you're thinking about dynamic balance. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the sensory components of balance. The first thing we have is your vision. And your vision is your sensory information that you're receiving from your eyes. And that's comprising 10% of the information that's being given to your brain in order to help you balance. The second is proprioception. And proprioception is information you're getting from your muscles and your tendons and your joints. And that information is providing 70% of the information that's helping you keep your balance. The vestibular system is 20% of what helps you keep your balance. And that's actually a balance organ that's in your inner ear. So it's a very small organ. It's about the size of like your pinky tip here. And as you can imagine, a lot is really happening in that tiny, tiny organ in your inner ear. And you do have one on each side. So we're going to talk a little bit later, and Erica will get into it a little bit later, about how it's very important that we have, using the word balance again, a balance between the two vestibular systems in your ears. And then what happens is the brainstem actually takes all of this information from your vision, from your proprioception, and from your vestibular system. And that's what helps you maintain your balance. So with all of that information, the brain then sends motor output to help you keep yourself upright. So as you're starting to lean in one direction, you're getting all that information. Your brain is interpreting that information, and it's telling your body to move the other way to keep you upright. So it's activating muscles and tendons and joints to move you over and get you back into balance. So as you can imagine, it's a very complicated system that I'm sure Drs. Prince and Dr. Patel talked a little bit about last week, that the neurologic system is a very complicated system. So vision. Vision is basically, if you can think about it, as sensory information you're getting through your eyes that's being relayed to your primary visual cortex in the occipital lobe. So it's in the back of your brain here. But when we're thinking about vision in regards to balance, we're not thinking about acuity. So in the picture here, this is the Snellen eye chart that I'm sure you've all seen many times when you're at the eye doctor. And when you're at the eye doctor, what they're doing is they're trying to determine what your acuity is. So your acuity is, 20/20, 20/80, So they're deciding how clearly you can see those letters at a near distance and at a far distance. What we're looking at here and what we're talking about when we're talking about our vision in regards to our balance is it's more about the ability of your eyes and your vision to stabilize an object. So it's not just how clearly we can see something, it's how we can stabilize it when we're moving. So as you're walking down the street and you're looking at a sign or looking at the bus stop and you're trying to read which bus is going to come to this bus stop and you're moving, it's your eyes and it's your eyes being able to stabilize that object as you are moving. So it's not just the ability to read those letters, it's the ability of your eyes to stabilize that, as well as the ability of your eyes to stabilize an object that's moving. So if a bus is driving by you and you're trying to read what bus number that is, your eyes are trying to stabilize that image as it's moving past you. Proprioception. So proprioception is the sensory information that you're getting from your muscles and your tendons and your ligaments. So this is when you're standing on the, let's say on the beach barefoot, you're getting all this great information through your feet. As your feet are touching the sand, you're feeling that underneath. As your muscles are gripping to hold you upright, all that sensory information from your muscles and your ligaments and your tendons is going to your brain and telling you the position of your ankles, the position of your knees. So as you can see here, this is as this little girl is playing pin the tail on the donkey. I don't know if you can tell from where you're sitting. Because her vision is occluded, right? So she has no vision to tell her where she's supposed to pin the tail. She's having to rely on her proprioception. So her proprioception, she's trying to remember where that target is, and she's trying to remember, and from her arm, she can't see her arm. So she's relying on the information her brain's getting from lifting her arm up where her arm is in space. So proprioception's what's giving her that information as she's doing this task. But it's quite hard, as I'm sure it's been a while since any of us have played pin the tail on the donkey. But if we have recently, I'm sure you remember, it's quite challenging. I don't know if anyone actually ever pinned the tail on the donkey, but... So the vestibular system, and this is kind of the meat of our presentation here, is a sensory system for posture and balance. The way it does that is it helps us orient to gravity, it detects accelerations of the head, and it helps you estimate your motion as you're moving through space. And Erica's going to go into much more detail about this in a moment. It also has reflexes that help you stabilize your gaze, like we were talking about earlier. So your brain is basically what's controlling all of this information. So you can see in this photo here, there's a gentleman here playing tennis, and he's getting all different types of information. So I myself am not a very good tennis player, so this probably isn't working all that well in my brain. But for those of you who maybe play tennis, I'm assuming all of this works pretty well. So basically your eye is giving you the visual information. So as you're standing on your side of the court and your opponent is on the other side and the tennis ball is coming at you, you're getting that visual information as the tennis ball comes towards you. You're also getting the joint and muscles are giving you information about your stance on the tennis court. So as you're standing and you're getting ready, your arms and your legs, right, are giving you that information about where your racket is in space, where you are. And then your inner ear is giving you information. You're getting sound from your hearing, right? So you're hearing the ball. Maybe you hear the ball hit the other tennis player's racket. And then also it's giving you information about your body position. So maybe as you're leaning forward, your vestibular system is giving you information there. Your brain there, as we say, as the master controller, is taking all that information in. What it's doing with all that information is hopefully, as the ball gets to your side of the court, you're actually able to hit it. And it's all of that information that's going in together that's helping you hit the ball, if you're one of those people who actually hits the ball when you play tennis. Which hopefully, you know, most people do. So, recovering from a loss of balance. As we're trying to balance, there's three different strategies we would use. An ankle strategy, a hip strategy, or a stepping strategy. The first strategy we ideally want to use is an ankle strategy. If we're using an ankle strategy, as you can imagine, you're going to have much smaller movements. So if I'm trying to balance on one foot here and I'm using an ankle strategy, I'm just going to be making small movements because I'm using the muscles in my foot and my ankle to help keep me balanced here. If that fails and I'm unable to do that, I'm going to use a hip strategy. a hip strategy is using the muscles in your hips. So that's going to be a much bigger movement. So if my ankle strategy falls, I'm here and I'm falling back and forth, but my hips are having to stabilize me. So I'm making much bigger movements. If both of those movements fail, I'm going to need to take a step. I'm going to have to move back to do that. So as I'm here and I'm losing my balance, I can't keep myself with my hip strategy anymore, I'm going to take a step to then go ahead and catch my balance. You can see this little toddler here in that middle position there looks like she's trying to maybe take a step to catch her balance and unfortunately ends up falling. For a small human like this, probably not a big deal that she falls. They fall pretty frequently. I have a little one at home and she's not walking yet, but I'm sure she will fall a lot when she learns how to walk. But as we all get older, it's much more detrimental if we fall. We could break something, we could really have some sort of major injury, which is why it's so important to work on maintaining our balance, and why just putting a little plug in for physical therapy is we're all here to learn about, why it's really important if you're having difficulty with your balance to see a physical therapist, because we can do a lot of things to help you maintain your balance and hopefully prevent any falls. So this picture here, the two people in the photo are in a dimly lit environment. So as we go back to our three sensory systems that we're getting information from, right, we have our vision, our proprioception, and our vestibular system. In this specific situation, these people aren't getting good visual input. Because of that, they're going to have to rely much more on their proprioception and their vestibular system. So as you can imagine, if this person has a vestibular dysfunction, this is going to be quite challenging for them to walk in a dimly lit environment. In this type of a situation, this is where a lot of people fall, right? They're getting up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, it's dark, they can't see, and they end up falling because they don't have that good visual information, giving them information about where they are in space. So that's why it's very important, and we make lots of recommendations to, you know, have some type of a light on, a bedside light, a light in your hallway or something, if you do need to get up in the middle of the night for safety. And then this picture here, this person's walking up a hill, which I'm sure as we all live in San Francisco, everyone has walked up a hill before. This is actually pretty mild by San Francisco standards. But as someone's walking up a hill, if we go back again to our three systems and think about what type of input this person is getting. So as they're walking up the hill visually, they're getting that visual input, right, as you see the hill in front of you. And then you can see other objects around you and that they're also at an angle, and all of that information is being processed by your brain to tell you, okay, I'm walking up a hill right now. As you're walking up this hill, generally you're leaning forward. So you're getting some information from your body that you've got a forward lean to kind of counteract that hill. You're also maybe getting some type of a stretch in the back of your calf. So that's some proprioceptive information. So as you're kind of leaning forward there, that information is telling your brain, I'm leaning forward, I must be walking up a hill. So then it's telling your body what it needs to do in order to maintain your balance as you're walking up this hill. Your vestibular system is also giving you information. As you're leaning forward and you're moving your head, you're getting that vestibular information as well. So all that information is going and being interpreted by your brain in order to help you safely walk up this hill. So this is a list of all the key ingredients for balance here. And we'll just talk a little bit about these. So the biomechanical constraints at the very top there, you can imagine this can be anything from if you have a lack of range of motion of your ankle. So if you can't move your ankle very much, it makes it very hard for you to use an ankle strategy. So you can imagine if you're trying to stand in balance and you can't move your ankle, the first thing you're going to need to do is use your hip strategy because your ankle strategy may not be available to you. Or maybe you have hip weakness. So that could be another constraint. If you don't have enough strength to maintain your balance here, then it's difficult to use a hip strategy as well. Sensory strategies. So this is basically like the integration of all of this sensory information and how your brain interprets what it's getting. And Erica will talk a little bit about that as we get a little more into the vestibular system and the information that it's providing for you. movement strategies. So how are you moving? So we talked a little bit about this already with the ankle strategy, the hip strategy, and the stepping. But there's also some reactive and anticipatory movement strategies as well. So if you're going to go on and get on one of those moving walkways or an escalator, you know that it's moving and you can see that it's moving. So as you're going to step up on the escalator, you're able to anticipate that and accommodate for that. However, if someone walks by you when you're in the mall and they knock you over, you have to react pretty quickly to keep your balance. So there's different types of balance as well, when you're anticipating something to happen or when you're not anticipating it and you have to react quickly to a different situation. So dynamic control. So this is something like if you're standing up and your body has to accommodate to that change in position if you're walking across a street. So as you're moving through different dynamic positions. Cognitive processing. So this is obviously pretty huge with all of our movements is cognition. It's your ability to attend to a task, your ability to learn when you're doing that task. And this is something we see all the time now, especially with cell phones, is, you know, dual tasking, people walking across the street and texting. So whether, you know, that's good or bad is we probably all know it's not ideal. But that's also a part of cognitive processing. You're having to try and think about what you're texting, actually texting and walking all at the same time, which is, in my opinion, just too many things to be trying to ask your brain to do all at once. And then your orientation to gravity. And this is actually a great segue because Erica's going to talk about your vestibular system and how it actually actually does orient you to gravity and tells you where you are in space.
Hello, I'm Dr. Erica Pitch. We're passing the baton here. All right, so I'm going to get into more detail on the vestibular system. This is way back in your inner ear, as we can see in the figure here. So this is a huge blow up of the structure right in your inner ear, conveniently located right behind your eye. It actually has to have that connection because it also it helps with keeping your gaze stable, so it needs that intimate connection with the muscles in your eyes. But I got ahead of myself. So key features here. The two important structures we're going to talk about are the semicircular canals, anterior, posterior, and horizontal. We'll talk about those more later. And then we also have the utricle and saccule. So I put these two together because they have two distinct functions and two unique features that make them very, very different from each other. But they're also very, very important. And you notice it's right next to the cochlea as well, so that's responsible for hearing. But we're not going to talk about that today. We're just talking about balance. So to review, we've talked about the vestibular system is one of the three components of the sensory systems for balance. And especially, it gives you information on accelerations, both linear. So like gravity is a linear acceleration as well as a linear acceleration forward. And then rotational. So anytime you turn your head, bob, weave, any sort of angular acceleration, that's your vestibular system in action. Also, it generates two very important reflex motor functions. So the main one we care about for preventing falls are these riding reactions to prevent a fall. So that push, that shove, that nudge, that unexpected perturbation, your vestibular system detects that really quickly and helps you generate the appropriate motor response for that. Secondly, this is the one system that helps keep your vision stable. All that turning your head, all that motion, your vestibular system detects that motion of your head and creates a equal and opposite motion in your eyes so that the world stays still. Without it, have you ever seen like a cameraman on the news running away? You know, it's like, you know, Robin Williams does a great impression of this. He's like, live at 5, you know, and the world just jumps around. That's what it kind of looks like when your vestibular system doesn't work. So it makes people not really want to move much because they're like, it's kind of hard, but we get ahead of ourselves. Okay, so orientation to gravity. Your vestibular system is your very own personal internal bubble level. That's basically how it works. And in one body of work, they actually, for people with bilateral vestibular loss, they gave them a bubble level that would get, you know, they basically attached a bubble level to a helmet and gave them a little stimulation on their tongue that told them when they tip their head. Anyway, it means a sensory substitution. But anyway, I guess I digress already. All right, so it's your inner bubble level. With that, it generates compensatory body movements in order to keep your head stable and your body stable with whichever position you choose to put your body in. So whether if you want to work on your handstand or your side plank or bend over to pick up an object, your vestibular system tells you where you are oriented in space, and that's through the vestibulospinal reflex. Now, it also detects these accelerations, both vertical, so anytime you bounce, anytime you do any sort of up and down motion, or riding a bicycle, any sort of linear acceleration, that's your inner ear. Angular accelerations. This, again, is in any rotation, whether you're turning over your head to check your rearview mirror, whether you're doing a somersault or a cartwheel, or doing a little partner dancing. I always thought partner dancing was the best balance exercise, or any kind of dancing was the best balance exercise, because here you are in semi-darkness with really sort of loud music as sort of your, a distractor, and then someone's trying to twirl you, and you're probably on a slick floor, too. So that's a huge balance workout right there. Or even lying down and getting up from bed is another angular rotation. All these are opportunities for stimulating your vestibular system, but also those are where problems can arise if they're not working. And of course, we already talked about the vestibular system. I always like to use extreme examples, right? You think it's hard to read while, walking? Try riding a horse and shooting an arrow. Cool. Yeah, I'd love to be able to do that. I'd be able to see the targets, like, I got it. Yeah, but that's what your VOR does, your vestibular ocular reflex. Fastest reflex in the body, but it helps keep the world stable. Okay, so again, like I said before, this generates eye movements which enable clear vision while the head is in motion. Like a person here trying to read an article while walking on the treadmill. Same thing. I can only do that for so long before I start going, huh. It's also really exhausting. So again, for every head movement to the right, your eyes make an equal and opposite movement to the left. Now, how does it do that? So our structures, we talked about were the utricle and saccule and the semicircular canals. Now, the utricle and saccule are the ones that detect this linear acceleration, and this is really important. They're the ones that are gravity sensitive. The utricle and saccule are gravity sensors, and we're going to talk why in a minute. The semicircular canals are not gravity sensitive under normal conditions. So again, just to review, semicircular canals and then the utricle and saccule here. So first, we're going to take a look inside these two. So right inside these two structures here, there's basically a set of hair cells with like gel, where the hairs, basically the hair cells are embedded in this sort of gelatinous mass. Not my words, that's a neuroanatomist. But what's really cool is on top of this gel where the hair cells are calcium carbonate crystals, salt crystals, that are called either otoliths, ear rocks, or otoconia. Right? So these are really important because, again, they add weight. These little rocks have weight or heft. So you can imagine if you tilt your head, the rocks tilt, and it tilts those hair cells. So if you, as you can see in the picture here, normal posture, person looks up, gravity moves that otolith, and then it deflects the hair cells underneath that. That makes those particular hair cells very excited, and they start firing more if they're oriented in that position to gravity. What's super cool is that within each side, and within each ear and then on opposite ears, they have different orientations. So depending on how you tilt your head, some are firing really fast and others are firing really slow. So you get really precise information on the exact position of your head at all times. Super cool. If those little rocks stay put. Spoiler alert. Okay. All right, that becomes important later. Foreshadowing. All right. So again, just a little review. So each of these hair cells have, you notice there's like sort of a triangular shape here. So there's longer on one side, shorter on the other. So that if the rocks tilted this way, then, these little hair cells are sitting there just kind of going, just doing their own thing, firing. And then those rock hair cells move, or the rocks move the hair cells, and then it's like, you're moving. Move away. Oh, I'm going to slow down. Nothing's happening. Right? So they encode this information just by how fast they're firing. So it must sound like, you know, if you could put an audio recording on all these different neurons, it must sound like an absolute cacophony, because some are going, woo, and others are going, rawr, you know. So they all have this specificity by firing frequency. All right, so that's the detail. Doing okay? All right, so that's how it works and how you get the sensitivity. Okay, and so like we said, it measures this acceleration, both head tilt. That's supposed to go away in dogs when they grow up, but Bear never got out of that habit.
Cookies?
His utricle and saccule worked fine. And this can be kind of fun, too. Accelerations can be kind of fun. So this is why, like, roller coaster rides are great, because you get these big, huge, linear accelerations. And I think Superman probably has a really good time flying. I would. All right, so that's one kind. The other one we talked about was those semicircular canals, the twirling. Right? So she's, if you remember this scene, she's, like, doing her whole little dance around the field. So she's definitely stimulating her horizontal semicircular canals right now. But what's unique about this, and it's very important, is unlike the utricle and saccule, which get their information from those rocks deflecting the hair cells, the semicircular canals have no rocks. All they have is fluid. And instead of like a bunch of hair cells in all over the place, you know, in the whole structure, they just have it in that little wider part. See, that's called the ampulla right there. And so if you look a little closer, so this is like the sort of the swelling part. So you have the hair cells right there. So what happens is as you turn your head, it creates a lag with the fluid, and the fluid kind of goes, oh, you're going, okay, and then sort of comes with. And that deflects the hair cells in the semicircular canals. Right? So it's kind of like if you've ever seen seaweed in a wave, you know, the seaweed's kind of doing this thing. That's what the hair cells do in your semicircular canals. It's just fluid moving around. And what is so cool about it is that you saw that there were three of them. So wait, I'm going back for a second. See, that's why you have three. So anterior, posterior, and horizontal. So whatever plane you're moving in, there's a horizontal canal that's most sensitive to that. And when you're moving in multiple planes, they're all going to be firing at different sort of, you know, rates to give you that idea of which way you're accelerating. All right, so this is just another figure to demonstrate that fluid lag. So as you turn your head to the left, for example, the left horizontal canal is very excited. The right horizontal canal is more inhibited. You turn the other way, the other side's more excited, the other side's inhibited. And so your brain likes this natural push-pull. It's expecting a push-pull. It is expecting an equal and opposite excitation on one side, inhibition on the other. Excitation, inhibition. Excitation, excitation, right? So no matter what direction you move, one side is getting super excited and the other's getting inhibited. Your brain really likes this. It loves the symmetry, and it's expecting that symmetry. Again, foreshadowing. Right? This is when both sides are working just fine. It wants this push-pull. That's where the trouble starts. Okay. Other cool thing is this orientation. So the horizontal canals are about 30 degrees. Well, interesting little parlor trick. If you have somebody to go, you know, play pin the tail on the donkey or walk in the dark, where does their head go? They'll kind of, sometimes, you'll orient your head so you're getting the most precise information, the most clear signal. Kind of a little cool little trick. But anyway, so that's how they're oriented, so you get all this clear spatial information. Now again, we said this, they work in pairs. One side gets excited, the other side gets inhibited. It's a push-pull. This is very, very important because the brain hates a mismatch. When you get the mismatch, that's what gives you symptoms, right? So, and that's why we talk about, you know, the title of our talk is When the World Spins Out of Control. If you're getting a whole lot of information from one side and not the other, your brain thinks you're spinning. And so that's why you get the sensation of vertigo, is this imbalance between the sides. And also, it can be kind of terrifying. Also, because you have links to it's, you know, integrated in the brainstem, it also has connections to the centers for nausea, amongst other things. So that's why it sort of gives you this constellation of symptoms. So once it goes from the inner ear, it comes together with hearing, you know, the nerve from the cochlea. That forms cranial nerve 8. Other nerve names are the acoustic nerve, like if you've heard of an acoustic neuroma, that's a tumor right there. Or it's also called the vestibulocochlear nerve. So same thing, transmitted through the 8th cranial nerve into the brainstem. And there's actually 4 vestibular nuclei all within the brainstem, and you're going to have to name them all by the end of the seminar and what they do. No, that's for our PT students. But you don't have to go there. But this slide is actually really helpful because it helps sort of integrate or gives you the appreciation of the complexity of all the integration that happens at that brainstem. So the vestibular system gets, you know, one piece of information, but then you're also getting, again, it does, the vestibular nuclei also cause this gaze stabilization, the posture and balance, those 2 things we talked about, but also for you to know where you are in space if you're tipping. You also get information from your neck. Because if your head's tilting, it's telling your head where you are too. If you're actually saying, I want to move somewhere, I'm going to plan on stand up, your brain's expecting that. So it's expecting this volley of information from your vestibular system. It's happy. It's also knowing that you're sort of, it gives you this estimation of how you're moving. You know, if you can feel where you're moving and how fast, you're like, okay, I'm going to get there a certain amount of time. Plus, we haven't even talked about this, the cerebellum, your little brain in the back that has more connections than the entire cortex combined, that's also the integrator. It also has its synapses in there. That's also modifying the information and processing that information. So it keeps your movement smooth. In order to keep your movement smooth, it has to know where you are. So all these things integrate to form balance. Pretty elegant, huh? Yeah. And that's what's so cool, is that under normal circumstances, when you move and your brainstem knows you're going to move and it gets the same information from all your other movement sensors, it's happy. It's sort of the information that kind of stops right there and it doesn't have to go forward. It's like, yep, everything's good. We're moving. We're dancing. No problem. It's when you get this mismatch, then the brainstem, and I heard this described, there's a mindfulness teacher and a psychologist named Rick Hansen from the Greater Good Science Center. I just happened to be listening to one of his talks, and at the Q&A at the end, his patient said, one of the first question was, I've been having benign vertigo. And he's like, oh, wow. And he goes, about 10 of my patients a week are with vertigo because it's scary. It's terrifying when you feel the world is moving out of control. But he goes, with vertigo or vestibular problems, you all just get this wonderful information boiling up from your brainstem. What a vivid image, you know. I don't know where I am, so your brainstem's going, I'm just sending all this information up and making you feel lousy because it hates a mismatch. And again, so it's either a mismatch from either the environment and between systems. When I mean a mismatch between systems, this is sort of like when you're on a boat below deck. So if you're on a boat below deck, everything is pretty, should be still. Or like especially like if you're in the bathroom below deck, so you really can't see anything moving, but you feel the whole boat moving. So your vestibular system is telling you, I'm moving up and down, but your eyes are saying, no, you're not. That's why you feel so bad. In space, when astronauts come back to Earth, they all look like they have a vestibular loss because, again, there's no gravity. So their vestibular system's like, if you don't need me, I'm just going to leave. I don't want to be ignored. So then it comes back again. They're like, ugh. They feel really bad. And those first couple days in space, they feel terrible because they see the world moving, but they don't feel it moving. Super cool. But again, they feel terrible only for the first day or so. When they come back to Earth, they only feel bad for the first day or so. Why? Because it's super plastic. It is one of the most adaptable systems in the human body. You train it. You expose it to what it doesn't like, and it goes, oh, is this what I'm getting? Okay. And it just, your brain gets used to it. Because, you know, it's too much of a fight to, like, put up all that noise. So it's just like, oh, okay, if I can, this is the information I'm getting, and I'm moving, and I'm good, then you can train your brain to learn what information it's getting. And that's the cool part. Okay. But when things go round and round, and to take sort of a pause for a second, there's a lot of terms that get thrown around. And so, you know, Alfred Hitchcock probably did us a favor, probably not. People thought vertigo was a fear of heights. No. Vertigo is that illusion of spinning. The illusion that you're moving when you're actually sitting still. So that's the true definition of vertigo, whether it's either yourself or the room is spinning. Where you can also, with a vestibular problem, you can also have a problem with just balance, an unsteadiness or imbalance where you really don't feel steady on your feet. That's very different from the world spinning. You can have both. Most people with vestibular problems often do have both. When that gaze stability is impaired, they'll call it oscillopsia, where the world is sort of slipping and bouncing, and you can't keep that vision stable. And again, that's different from acuity. Often it's hard to keep your vision acute as you're moving your head. So that's how you can sort of tell the difference. If you're holding still and you can still see clearly, then that's not a vestibular problem. It's when you're moving your head and then it's harder to see. That's where the VOR is impaired. Nystagmus. That's the, it's a very characteristic eye movement, which is actually named by the Greek term for nap jerk. Right? So when somebody's falling asleep, what happens? Slow. Right? So it has this slow and a fast phase. That's usually induced when you have this imbalance again where your brain thinks you're spinning when you're actually not. It's your brain trying to correct for the spin. So that's also a characteristic sign of especially an acute vestibular problem. And as we talked about before, because of its intimate connections with the brainstem and those nausea centers, when you get this imbalance, it can also make you feel pretty darn sick. Now, how many possible ways could cause a problem with said inner ear? Probably the most frequently occurring is benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, BPPV. All right, so yeah, that's the most typical, and we like that word benign. You're not going to die from it. You feel like you might when you lie down because the world is spinning really hard for less than a minute. But then you're like, okay, it stopped. It stops is a good thing. Okay, other things. So, for example, you can get a viral infection in your inner ear, a labyrinthitis. So that can take out one side. Some medications can be extremely effective for one problem, but can also be extremely effective in damaging the hair cells in your vestibular system. So that can actually take out both ears. In very rare circumstances, that can happen. Another problem is Meniere's disease, where you have a fluid imbalance in your ear, so you have this constant fluctuation of pressure in their inner ear, so people will get attacks of vertigo or spinning lasting hours or days, and it's also associated with an ear ringing because of that fluid in the ear. So that's another way of sort of telling it apart, is that you have this ringing at the same time. Now, because the brain is your big balance integrator, there are also many problems with the brain that can cause dizziness. So people with multiple sclerosis often have problems with dizziness and vertigo or balance problems. Stroke, so especially strokes in the cerebellum and certain parts of the circulation can affect the brainstem. In very rare cases, vertigo is the primarily presenting symptom, but oftentimes people will have other symptoms of stroke as well. Of course, people with a traumatic brain injury, and this includes concussion. So patients with a concussion can have dizziness and vertigo for that can be pretty severe and incapacitating. And migraine is also a very frequent cause of vertigo. So vertiginous migraine is a whole sort of on the continuum of migraine. Now, if you look at this list, there's some, we like one. We like the benign one. Right, let's have the benign one. And again, this is mainly focusing on vertigo, per se, that first symptom, that spinning. There's any number of, you know, once we start talking about all those different systems that go into balance, any number of things can affect your ability to balance. But this is just in particular to the inner ear. So let's talk about benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. So this is a distinct problem with the semicircular canals. 80% of the time it's in the posterior canal, because notice it's really close to the utricle and saccule. Remember, the utricle and saccule have rocks. Semicircular canals do not. But sometimes the rocks break free. Oh, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, so that's where the problem comes in, is that those rocks can dislocate and get into the semicircular canal, which if you're sitting still isn't a problem, but then anytime you roll over, one side is getting its expected swirl, and the other side is getting a bunch of turbulence over this rock that's in there. So you're getting a massive amount of information from one side and not the matching information from the other. This causes this raging spinning sensation when you change position. But it's only when the fluid is moving. It's a key feature. So when you change position, spin, 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 then it settles. It settles in less than a minute. So we always see people coming in and they're like, not moving their head much, or they say, when I roll over, it happened when I rolled over in bed. When I look up, or when you go in that certain plane, then you cause that turbulence. So that's what you sort of are looking for, is that brief bout attack of vertigo with usually no other symptoms. There's no ringing. There's no anything else because it's just a rock. It's just that calcium carbonate crystal dislodged. So there shouldn't be any other thing but just the vertigo. If it's any other symptoms, it's not BBBV. Now, what's cool about it is because it has a really, when it works, it's a very, very simple technique where you just shake the rocks back into place. You can't just go, that would be nice. No. But if you look at the alignment, I'm going to back up a bit. So you notice how these certain planes. So there are clinical tests we do where if you align that semicircular canal up in its particular plane, you can reproduce that vertigo symptom. Then you take the person through a series of maneuvers called the Epley maneuver, and you can basically shake that rock out of place. So usually like 1 to 3 tries, the Epley maneuver can sort of reposition those calcium carbonate crystals. 80% of the time it's in the posterior canal. So most of the time that solves the problem. Problem is, there's no guarantee that the rocks stay put. Yeah, so just like a shoulder that dislocates once, you know, the probability of having it again is relatively high. And great news about aging, those rocks get looser as we get older. Fantastic! Yeah, just great, yeah. But the good news is it has a relatively simple fix. Usually you need, you know, sorry, a healthcare provider to show you the ropes and how to do it initially. So usually, and oftentimes, patients will look it up on YouTube and go, oh, it worked a couple times, and then it didn't. And then we'll see them in clinic and go, oh, yeah, you need to go this way. And just, you know, so it's always good to do it under professional guidance first. Yeah. This is not a substitute for vestibular rehabilitation or any medical care. All right. So, but when, we saw a lot of big bad uglies and big scary things on there related to, you know, the symptom of vertigo. So the question becomes, when to go to the emergency room immediately. And the first rule is, you go if your spouse tells you to. You know, just say yes, dear, and, you know, have the spouse drive. Okay, because if you're getting dizzy when you turn your head, I do not want you on the road. All right, so that's usually the case, because you can't, you know, with just those brief episodes of vertigo, usually you can kind of know, like, okay, I rolled over and went away, not feeling any fell some. You're pretty fine. But if the dizziness is that bad, you're not safe. Your balance is severely impaired. You need some help. So other things to look out for is when you have this abrupt onset of this constant vertigo, the constant spinning, if you're having double vision, if you're having difficulty speaking or swallowing, if you're having any other signs of a stroke. Right, and so this is also this is a class participation part. What other signs of a stroke do you know? So we have the difficulties swallowing. What else would you see in the face? Yeah, so the facial droop, and I saw somebody doing this. So what would be going on with the arm? The weakness on one side. Yeah. Speech. saying some strange words, you know, gobbledygook that doesn't make sense. Yeah, then you're like, you've got 911 dialed, and you're getting to the hospital. But yeah, so you're really looking about this for this abrupt onset of vertigo. But oftentimes, balance problems can be the sort of slow onset where you're just like, huh, you know, I was walking at sunset the other day, and I really just did not feel as stable as I usually do. And I really, you know, had a hard time doing the dismount on the escalator. It's those gradual things where we can really help and also nip some problems in the bud. Because usually what tends to happen is that if people are scared to lose their balance, then they stop doing things. Stop doing things, and then you sort of lose the capacity to do things. And now we're adding insult to injury. So that's why physical therapy wants to come in and really train and help build those things back up. And I think with here, I'm going to hand over the podium to Heather again. She's going to talk about what we can do. Is that the right transition spot? All right. And then I'll have a review for you at the end.
All right. So now that Erica's provided us with an awesome explanation of what the vestibular system does and how it contributes to keeping us in balance and as well as you know, all those dizzy symptoms and everything we kind of talked about. So what, as physical therapists, do we do with people who've had vestibular problems? So one of the very first things we're going to do is to meet your immediate needs. So to make sure that you can move around safely. So like Erica was saying, if you're feeling, you know, really dizzy and off balance all the time, maybe you need a cane or a walker or something to move around safely. Maybe it's important that you're clearly not driving. If the room is, you know, if the world is spinning around you, it's probably not safe. Maybe it's important that you have someone with you at all times. So we would kind of help guide you through that process. So the first thing we're thinking about is safety. So that's where our compensation comes in. The second thing here is recover. So what we're going to do is in our physical therapy evaluation is help identify where the difficulties are and go through this whole evaluation where we're going to look at some of the things we talked about today, your proprioception, your sensation. We're going to look at the function of your vestibular system. How is that all working together to keep you upright? And we can identify where the problems are and give you exercises that can help you work on those problems to help improve your balance and improve your safety, decrease your risk of falls. These are some of the things we can help you with. Gaze stabilization. So that's working on that VOR reflex that Erica talked about. Sensory organization, so that's helping you, you know, integrate the information that you're getting from your proprioception sensation, integrating the information you're getting or not getting from your vision. So, you know, one of the exercises is balancing with your eyes closed. It's challenging. And we now know the reason why it's challenging, right? Because vision is one of those three sensory systems that we use to help us balance. So when you're closing your eyes, you no longer have that visual information anymore. So now you're having to rely on those two other systems. So we would give you exercises to help work on that so that your brain knows how to interpret the information it's getting in a variety of different situations. Compensatory stepping. That's something we touched upon earlier too. So if you're really losing your balance and you're about to fall, what do? You want to take a step forward. So we would evaluate how you're able to do that in different situations and give you exercises to help you work on that. So that when something does happen that's unanticipated and you need to react quickly, someone nudges you, someone bumps you, you know, something moves really quickly that you're not expecting, you're able to catch your balance. So that's also something we help you work on in physical therapy. And like Erica mentioned, too, you know, a lot of our patients come in not moving because they're so afraid of being dizzy. So one of the most important things is avoiding dizziness does not make it better in these situations. So one of the things Erica was talking about so much is your brain wants equal information. So if you're getting unequal information from one ear because you have some type of infection in that ear, let's say, so every time you turn your head, it makes you feel dizzy. So what do? You walk into physical therapy or you walk through life and you're walking around like this. I'm just not going to move my head anymore because if I never move my head, I'll never get dizzy again. So then what happens when you're walking down the street and your friend is standing next to you and you have to turn to talk to them? Oh my gosh, I feel terrible because I moved my head. I've just got to never do that again. Well, that's terrible, right? We're not going to walk through life like that. So what you want to do actually is move your head, because what happens is your brain is really smart. Your brain can learn to interpret the information it's getting. So if you have that infection in the right ear and you're not getting good information, your brain can learn to listen to that information, that it's no longer getting good information because you have that infection in your ear. But if you never move your head again, your brain cannot reintegrate that information because now it's getting nothing, right? If I'm moving here, I'm getting no information because my head's not moving. So we want to keep moving to keep that brain getting all that dynamic input and so that it can reintegrate and relearn what information you're getting. So this is an example of a gaze stabilization exercise that we would give patients. It's actually probably one of the most boring exercises in the world. However, the research shows actually it's one of the most important exercises. So it's hard as a physical therapist to, you know, convince your patients to do these exercises when they're not that fun. But it's a really important exercise to stabilize your vision while you're moving. So basically what you're doing in this exercise is you're holding a letter and you're moving your head back and forth. And if you have a dysfunction in your vestibular system, it makes you feel pretty terrible. But like I was talking about earlier, you don't want to avoid the dizziness because you want your body to be able to compensate for that dizziness. So that's why this is important, and what this is working on is the vestibulo-ocular reflex, which Erica touched upon earlier, the VOR. So this is something we looked at earlier as well. So all of these different components that go into your postural control. So we, in physical therapy, we'd give you exercises to work on whatever the reasons are that are prohibiting you from being able to keep your balance. So going back to the beginning, right, we talked about biomechanical constraints. So if you have hip weakness, we can give you exercises to work on your hip strength to help you keep your balance. Sensory strategies, we can give you different strategies to work with the information that your brain is getting. So we can definitely give you an exercise to work on any of these different difficulties that we find during our evaluation. So how to improve your balance? So obviously some exercises are better than others, and how do we know which ones are good for balance? So some basics here. So Tai Chi is awesome for balance. You're doing a lot of movement at the ankles. So you're using your ankle strategy, right, which is our the strategy we want to use for our balance. So that's a great exercise to do because you're working on strengthening and stabilizing all of those foot and ankle muscles that are really important to keep us upright. Zumba, also an awesome exercise for balance. So if you think about that dual tasking, right, when you're doing Zumba, which I haven't done myself, but because I'm not that coordinated, but you're having to watch the instructor, right? As the instructor is doing a move, you're having to think, okay, now I need to do that move. So you're cognitively having to work, you're moving, right? So you're doing all these things, you're moving your head. So it's a very dynamic exercise. Definitely not a great exercise to do if you just had a vestibular injury, right? We were talking about you don't want to move your head because it makes you dizzy. The first thing you probably don't want to do is go to Zumba class. However, it's a great rehabilitation strategy. So when you're getting better and you're getting better at able to turn your head, Zumba is a great way to get your brain to learn that sometimes we move our head quickly and it's good to accommodate to that and to be able to do that, right? Sometimes when you're driving and you hear something behind you, you have to turn really quickly and see what's happening back there, right? We can't avoid all of that in life. Sit to stands and squats. These are some of the exercises we love in physical therapy because they work on, controlling your center of gravity and your mass, as well as leg strength, which is great and very important for balance as well. However, lying down stretches, they're great exercises, but in reality, they're really not going to help you with your balance. So when would you see a physical therapist? If you've had a recent fall, you should definitely tell your physician about it and ask for a referral to physical therapy. I would hope that all of the physicians at UCSF, if you tell them you've had a fall, they would automatically refer you to physical therapy. But if not, it's definitely always good to ask. If you're afraid of falling because you feel like your balance isn't as good as it used to be, another good reason to see a physical therapist. If you have any symptoms of vertigo or imbalance, so if you've got that spinning feeling, like Erica said, we have that Epley maneuver that we can do to help get that crystal back into place, as well as teach you how to do on your own, as well as, you know, giving you exercises to help you with your balance. And we can also see you for a one-time consult just to get your baseline falls risk, do some balance assessments, see how you're doing, maybe give you a couple different exercises to work on. One thing I would, you know, kind of want to hit home with about physical therapy is, you know, I think people sometimes have a viewpoint of, oh, if I go to physical therapy, they're going to want to see me 3 times a week for the next 3 years of my life. And that's generally not what we want to do at all, actually, although I'm sure you're all lovely people and we'd like to see you. You know, a lot of times we see patients for 1 or 2 visits and we say, hey, you know what, you're actually doing really well. Work on these 3 things. And if something happens, you know, come back, get another referral. So it's not necessarily that we need to see you all the time. We give you a lot of tools and things to work on, and we want to send you on your way and back into the world and doing those exercises. So don't be afraid to get a referral to physical therapy thinking you're going to be stuck seeing us forever. You know, it can be a one-time, two-time, three-time thing, depending upon how you're doing. And so Balance Rehab at UCSF, we're really lucky here because we have a great team that's ever-growing. So we have Erica and myself, and Allison as well, Monica and Kat, who most of you, I think, saw last week, and another specialist, Irina. We have 2 clinics, well, 1.5 clinics currently. We have 1 clinic that's currently up and running at Mission Bay, and 1 that will be up and running, let's say, maybe this month, maybe next month, sometime in 2017, something around then. So we'll have those 2 clinics open that we take insurance at. We also have a cash-based service down at Mission Bay Health and Wellness, where Erica sees patients. And we also, down there, we also have individual and group Balance Fit classes that you're able to enroll in as well. Thank you guys very much. And Erica actually has a special review presentation here.
So I just saw Hamilton, and I always, like, I have written raps before for my other classes, so I got a review for you. So I'm trying to go slow because I talk fast, but I'm just going to, like, take you through here, so let's see if we can do it. All right. So one of the brain's most spectacular talents is integrating all the different systems for balance. The stretch receptors in your muscles make a great big fuss and keep you from falling when you ride a jerky bus. But when you're walking on sand or outside in the yard, the information's muddy and makes balance kind of hard. It comes as no surprise that your eyes are the presumed star of the show. We can see where we are and where we want to go. But when it's lights out, your eyes don't know whether it wears up or down or which way is the door. If you were depending on vision for balance, you can end up on the floor. The vestibular system, so elegant and deserving of admiration, 2 unique structures for detecting acceleration. The utricle and saccule have otoconia on hair cells that get super excited when you bob on ocean swells. While the semicircular canals use fluid that swirls every time you turn your head or your body twirls. What's more amazing still is that the visual world doesn't move an ounce, even if you make your head pitch and bounce. That's the system's underrated star, the reflex called the VOR. All right. Oh, not done yet. Now, the brain's job is to take these inputs and make sense of it all and generate the appropriate response or inhibit one, as in a trust fall. If one system's out, your brain's not happy. It can make you feel dizzy, queasy, and imbalanced. But don't despair, don't sit still. The brain can adapt, but it takes some force of will. If you move around and exercise gets easy, make it harder and get a little queasy. Don't despair, it's your brain putting up a fight. Practice hard till you get it right. All right, well, that's good. Okay. All right, thank you. All right, so I'll bring Heather back up here and open up for questions.
So the question was, is there a schedule for the Balance Fit classes?
Yeah, so right now we have the Balance Fit class at 11 o'clock every Friday. It's an ongoing class. And we can get you the phone number for Health and Wellness just to confirm. Sometimes I'm out of town, so they won't have class, but usually it's every Friday at 11. At our 1675 Owen, so within the gym at Mission Bay. And you have a question back there? Okay, so the question was, what causes labyrinthitis? So oftentimes it's It can be either a bacterial or a viral infection of that vestibular nerve. So often it occurs after like an upper respiratory infection, but it's caused by a virus. So there's no real predictor of how the virus gets there, or it's just a typical, it's just an infection of the vestibular nerve, usually associated with a different sort of, timed with a different infection. Okay, good question. So if you lose the information from one side or one canal, how long does it take to recalibrate? That depends. If you go home and don't move, it can take a really, really long time. Individual mileage tends to vary, but how long would you say, Heather?
I mean, I'd say if you're moving your head and you're letting your body habituate to the environment, I mean, it can happen pretty quickly. A month, 2 months, even less sometimes. I mean, it can be weeks if you're keep moving your head. But if you stop moving your head at all and stop doing anything, I mean, you could be stuck with dizziness after a year if you're really hesitant and not wanting to move your head at all because you're not letting your brain reinterpret that information.
On the positive end, I think one of my favorite patients, like when I first took my first course in vestibular rehabilitation, and I had a patient who was dizzy for 2 years from like a unilateral loss that I just hadn't compensated for. And I did the typical test to look, and his vestibular ocular reflex was impaired. And of course, being a new learner, I was like, oh, cool, that was a positive test. Showed him the exercises, showed him the exact exercise Heather showed you here. So turn your head fast, keep it focused, look far, keep it focused. He came back 2 weeks later, and his son said, he's kind of scared to be, he's doing fine. He's the best he's felt in 2 years. He's kind of afraid to like be done with physical therapy because he can't believe he's better. But he just did it like it was a job. And so a lot of patients, and those patients who, it's the ones that like have the stiff upper lip and just like walk through it and bear through it, they're the ones that tend to do better. I mean, it's completely, vestibular rehab is the complete opposite of pain. Usually if you have acute painful injury, you don't want to go where it hurts. Here you have to go where it makes you feel bad. You don't want to have to go feel so bad that you feel off a cliff and you're vomiting, but you sort of make yourself dizzy, come back, make yourself dizzy, come back, make yourself dizzy, come back. And that's what helps your brain retrain. Okay, so it was a question about how the vestibular ocular reflex gets integrated, and that some people can have more trouble going one direction more than another. Heather, did you want to take this one, or do you want me to?
Sure.
Okay.
So basically, kind of what Erica was talking about with the hair cells, and you're supposed to get equal and opposite information. So when you're having a difficulty, let's say, turning right, it could be because there's not that much information from the right ear. Maybe there's less hair cells that are giving you information from that right ear. There's also could be, in a different situation, right, there could be something going on in your neck as well that's restricting you or some kind of, so we definitely want to clear your neck as well to see if there's anything that's going wrong there, to see if there's anything we can fix that's maybe stuck or limiting your motion that's maybe causing, I mean, it's hard, it's kind of like the chicken or the egg, right? Which one came first? Mm-hmm. Did you have some type of problem with your neck that then gave you some decreased vestibular information because you don't turn to the right very much? Mm-hmm. Because your neck doesn't like to turn right. So then you get that poor vestibular match, right? Mm-hmm. And you cause that because you had a neck problem to start with. Or did you have a vestibular problem to start with? And maybe it turned into a neck problem too, right? So it's kind of that. It could be a couple different things that are causing it.
Well, and to follow up with that too. So often, for example, when someone has a unilateral loss, so for example, an acoustic neuroma, where a tumor can just take out the vestibular nerve. So now you're getting no information from that side. So that's the weak side. Oftentimes people with a side of weakness like that will often veer or lose their balance to that side. It's almost predictable. When you have people like walk in turning their head, they'll walk and look one way and be fine and then go woo and sort of veer. So depending if we can identify a sighted loss, we usually expect people that they may tend to lose their balance in that direction. Ooh, good question. Okay, so the question was the risk of falling increases with age. Why? And what part? Like is it what components of it cause the increase in falls as we age? And just like when we had that little diagram with all the circles, any one of those components can contribute to fall risk. So, and that's, yeah, it's any one of those. So, for example, oftentimes with people with dementia, their awareness of their limitations, their awareness of their environment, they'll put themselves in dicey situations where they'll fall just from a processing or problem-solving error. If we're getting up and rushing to the bathroom in the dark, and we don't see the, you know, cat snoozing on our bed, or we get our feet tangled in the sheets or something. You know, so there's any number of reasons that older adults can fall, but although statistically falls increase with age, do not accept it as an inevitability. Right? We're all going down swinging. Right? All right, other questions? Okay, so the question was benign vertigo. What causes it? Does it just come on? You know, can we prevent it? And did you want to take it or?
Sure.
All right, go for it.
So unfortunately, we don't know what causes it necessarily. Like what Erica was saying, that as we get older, unfortunately, those crystals become less adhered to the hair cells. So it becomes easier for them to fall off and get stuck in the semicircular canals. So unfortunately, the incidence increases as we all get older, and we are all getting older. As far as I know. But what generally happens is when you come in to physical therapy or your primary physician or anyone and that crystal's in the wrong place and we do the repositioning maneuver, in general, I'd say 80% of the time, you're good to go. The crystal's back where it's supposed to be. It's not going to get dislodged. But maybe 3 years down the road, it happens again. And in general, it'll happen in that same ear, and you'll have the same symptoms you did before because there's that crystal that's already been dislodged once and can get dislodged again. So it can happen that it can happen again. I mean, you could get it in one instance, and it could never happen to you again. So there is no exact answer. It's not like once you get it done every week on Monday evening, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen that frequently. In general, it's maybe it happens a couple times, and maybe we need to do the maneuver a couple times to really get it back into the correct place. But once it's back, you should be symptom-free for, you know, years until it kind of comes back again. But that first bout, it may take a couple times to do the repositioning maneuver to get it, that crystal back into that right place. Right. It's a great question. So just to reiterate her question here, she was just mentioning she's done the Epley maneuver multiple times, had this fuzziness in the front of her brain that hasn't gone away. I'm not quite sure how long in general you've had the symptoms for.
Months.
So I would... Right. So what you're describing and what Erica was describing as BPBV are two separate things, right? So BPBV is that you have that dizziness, it lasts less than 60 seconds, and it goes away. So I'm not here to diagnose you, but it doesn't sound like you have BPBV.
Yeah.
And that tends to be something that, like Erica was saying, a lot of vestibular disorders are BPBV, and it tends to be that thing on the front of everyone's mind. So a lot of times when someone says, I have vertigo, someone says, you know what you have? You have BPBV. And that's actually not always the case. Because if you have BPBV, you will have this crazy spinning vertigo, less than 60 seconds, that goes away when you stop moving your head. So if you have different symptoms like you're describing, it could be lots of different things. It could be vestibular migraine. There could be some type of hypofunction in your vestibular system. So you should definitely get a workup by the, you know, we have a huge team here with otolaryngology at the audiology center. They can do a lot of different tests to look at the function of your vestibular system and see what may be going on.
So the question was, what happens to her is that when she's walking, she'll stub a toe and then start, you know, try to do the recover and start running until she is stopped by something instead of stopping herself. And so that's a really good example of a stepping strategy that's not quite enough. And so that's one of the things that we actually, you know, train in rehab is actually helping that stepping strategy be right and fast on the first time. And if it's looking at, well, why can you not generate that speed? And, you know, that the, because if you think about if you're really going timber, that is a big, fast step that has to be accurate and sharp. How do we do our exercises? Slow and controlled. That's not good enough. Gravity is fast and doesn't care. So you have to train at the speed of gravity. So sometimes that we can be a little bit cautious with people and not train people at the speed of gravity. But I think we're uniquely evil at our clinic, and that if you're not tired and exhausted, we're doing our job wrong. And so we want to make sure that you're actually, you know, training those things you need to do. So oftentimes, or if I tell my patients, if I don't make you yelp or be scared at least once in session, you know, I'm not challenging you enough. But I also wanted to follow up a little bit because oftentimes when people have BPV that hasn't been treated. And again, by definition, benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. So it's this paroxysm. It's a great word for just like this thunderclap attack. If that rock's been floating around there for a really long time, again, the brain's adaptable. The brain is an adapter. But if it gets intermittent information, like if you're not moving your head, it's like, okay, I'm happy, I'm getting equal information, roll over, and then there's this mismatch. It's trying to adapt to that, and then it doesn't get it again. So your brain doesn't quite know how to adapt. So if people are chronic, you know, have BPPV for a long time, they can still feel a little ugh after they've been fixed. And so that's where sometimes it's sort of this adaptability is sort of a little bit delayed when it doesn't have a stable baseline. Whereas in contrast with someone with like a acoustic neuroma or something where that vestibular nerve is damaged, then it's nothing. The brain's getting nothing from that side. The brain's like, great, I'm just going to ignore you and pay attention to the other side. That I can work with. But when it's a moving target, it's harder for the brain to adapt. What's going on when you dive in and you get pressure in your ear and vertigo? It means you shouldn't go diving. Stop it. Yeah, no, they're really neighbor. I don't know. Do you have any other answers?
I agree with Erica.
Like, that means you go to your ENT. That's not a PT problem. Okay, I think over here, and then it was over here. So you said we mentioned Tai Chi is a really good form of exercise that can improve balance. Are there other exercise strategies that can improve balance and prevent falls before they happen? How can you make your balance even better before it becomes a problem? And
physical therapy.
Yeah.
No.
You're gonna take it?
No. So some of the exercises, and I'm not, like Erica said at the beginning, this isn't a you know, a substitute for therapy, and I'm not saying you should go out and do these exercises because maybe it's not safe for you. I'm not going to say whether or not it's safe or not. Mm-hmm. But practice balancing with your eyes closed is a great exercise to do if it's safe. Right. Don't go and practice with your eyes closed in the shower.
Or at the BART station.
But it is a good exercise because, as we were talking about before, right, you've got the three sensory systems. So if you take one out, your vision, you're having to rely on your proprioceptive information and your vestibular system. So it's strengthening those, your brain's interpreting of the information from those two systems, which is good because we walk around with our eyes open. We're always getting visual input. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to sometimes take that away and get the brain to accommodate without that information. So that would be a quick and easy exercise, yeah. But safely.
Yeah. And my big thing too is I like pushing the edge. So of course the edge of safety. That's why like in our balance class we'll actually do little jumping drills. Not major like crazy, what is it? So we're not talking box jumps or anything like that. We're talking the bunny hop. We're talking hopscotch. Because, again, gravity is fast and doesn't care. So you need to train at the speed of gravity. So we'll do little things that require little jumping. Quick lunges. I call it my favorite exercise is kill the bug. So if you see a running cockroach, you go, do a big long step and then stop. So you're generating speed and arresting your momentum. Like if you're crossing the street and a toddler runs in front of you, you're like, that kind of thing. Being able to catch yourself really quickly requires a prescription from a skilled professional like us. All right. See, we're plugging our profession, right?
Yeah.
You know, don't trust these exercises with just anybody. Okay, so you had a question and then back there. So I think the question was, so if you have, like, fluid in your ears, can that help with that as well? And, you know, preventing those exacerbations. So part of that's more of, like, a ear problem as opposed to a vestibular problem, so prevention. So you're using, like, you know, we're swimmers.
Yeah.
And so we use, like, when we go swimming, I used to have the same problem. Like, people kind of thought I had a little bit of a problem in the clinic because I'd always be doing this, like, you know, and get stuck. You know, I'd just, like, be spending all day trying to get the water out of your ears. Just keep it from getting in there. Yeah, or even just, like, shower. I mean, putting, I know it's the earplugs in the shower are not fun, but prevention. Any other?
Yeah, but the same kind of thing, I think getting a workup at UCSF too, I don't know if you have, you know, with ENT, audiology, kind of going through all the tests and seeing what is going on and seeing if it is something that's vestibular, because if it is, you know, physical therapy can help, but if it's purely ear, then the exercises probably won't help. However, balance exercises are great. Nice. So, you know, you could probably benefit from it either way.
Okay. All right, we got time for one more question. Yep. So the question is more of a statement of there are a lot of community resources for fall prevention classes. The One Aquatic Park, and there's also a branch in the Mission that's run by USF, an exercise physiologist named Chris Thompson. And also at City College has like the community classes there. So yeah, there's a lot of different resources in the community that have just general exercise classes that are also good for fall prevention. Millbury Union, I don't know if they have a specific. We don't have a fall prevention class taught by a physical therapist there. So the Balance Fit class at our Health and Wellness Center is taught by me, and so it sort of goes straight for the jugular in terms of balance problems. So we sort of So this class is $50 for a one-time drop-in. If you buy four, it's $40 per class, and the class is about six people. So it's pretty small. So that's why it's, yeah, I'm like.
And it's at Mission Bay.
Yes. Yep. All right, it's 8:30.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.